Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to start.
Job to do. That's win. That means you stay focused for four quarters. Know your assignments and finish on every play. Don't be looking for shortcuts and don't even think about making excuses. Because if you want the W, you're going to have to earn it. Nothing comes for free. Not 1 yard. You pay for it with sweat, with determination, with heart. You do things the right way because that's the only way. Pick up your teammates, you keep your head high, and you remember everything you went through to get here. Because at the end of the day, there's only one person looking back at you in the mirror, and that's one person you don't want to cheat.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me?
All right, boys and girls, it is Saturday, and it is time for the ballots. Good earn. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. That's right, boys and girls, we're rolling right on into playoff weekend. Joining me now is one of my panel of experts. We're still waiting on the rest of them to join us, Mr. Michael Daly. How we doing, sir?
Good
Are we ready
morning,
for some poop?
Good morning, Mr. El Presidente, Kimasabi. Master of the airways, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Cold morning here in Indianapolis. Good test
Tell
run
me about
for the
it.
Super Bowl. Also joining us, Mr. Axel, a.k.a.
Hey.
Chad. What's up, my brother, from another
bar? I'm doing good, man. Just keeping busy.
Keeping busy. All right, guys. Well, let's jump right into it. It is, well, we can talk a little bit about the firing of Jim Caldwell. In fact, why don't we go ahead and get that out of the way. Guys, we do have a jam-packed show today. Of course, we're going to be talking NFL all for the first hour. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking some Big Ten hoops. Jimmy the intern, Jimmy the cabin off, and Evan Williams from BleedingGoldenBlack.com from up at Purdue. Going to talk a little bit about the up-and-coming IU-Purdue matchup and what in the world is going on with those Indiana Hoosiers. We're going to talk about that coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Mr. Philip B. Wilson, IndianapolisStar.com, going to join us, going to talk with us a little bit about the future of the Colts. Also going to talk some NFL with us, Mr. Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Going to join us here in about 30 minutes, guys. So let's jump right into it. We'll start with you, Chad. Caldwell gone. Good decision or not. Tony Dungy says this week you're not going to find a better coach than Jim Caldwell. Do you agree?
No, I don't. I think there are some good experienced coaches like Zimmer of Cincinnati Bengals who have been around in the NFL long enough. And, hey, whoever thought Jim Harbaugh would be the coach that he would be? I mean, it's like... if you do the right search and find the right fit for the organization, when Mike Tomlin came in, did anybody think that he would be as successful as he was? So it's all about the organization. If you put the right talent around and the coach that can maximize the talent, that's all you can ask for. And I'm pretty confident that Ryan Grigson is going to do the right job, and especially when Jim Irsay used the term rebuilding, it made no sense to rebuild with Caldwell at the top. So,
all right, Mr. Michael, good decision or bad decision for the firing of Jim Caldwell, the Indianapolis Colts head coach?
I'd have to say good decision because, I mean, a lot of, I pretty much have to echo a lot of things Chad just said. But, you know, you've got a new GM coming in. He needs to bring in his own guy. You can't take somebody else's work and just try to fit yourself into it. He has to take charge. And for him, that means somebody else that he feels like he can work with better than Caldwell. And, you know, that's typically, I think, what happens in these kind of situations. And I think that's what he's got to do.
Well, and I agree. I honestly thought, and you know, not very often is El Presidente wrong on this show. I actually thought that Jim Caldwell would get a pass. I very few times has it happened.
when you forget who's playing who, right, for fantasy football?
Or in the playoffs, for that matter. I don't know if you guys were on the show with us. Now, and that may have even been on the regional show with Gary Snyder, but I was just going on about a whole completely different team. And I think I was even talking about the Saints and the Packers. I don't know, but it was one of those days. So yeah. And see, the thing is, guys, to show you that it doesn't happen very often, you guys can actually remember the times I was wrong. So if it happened all the time, you wouldn't be able to pinpoint certain circumstances. So, you know. But this is one of those times I thought that Jim Caldwell would get a pass and they'd give him at least a partial season to prove his worthiness. But to be cliche, the new GM, Gregson, has came in and just cleaned house from the top to the bottom. Really, there's not very many people standing right now. There's a few people left standing. Also, that kind of let's talk about this. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Peyton Manning, whether or not he's going to come back to the Indianapolis Colts. I personally think that he will be back. Obviously, a lot of people think that he won't be. There's been a lot of buzz on Twitter and across the social media world about Peyton Manning and the Jets. I don't really think that's where he'll end up at. I think if he does decide that he's not going to play with the Colts anymore, it's going to be a retirement factor. So let's talk a little bit about Peyton Manning, number 18, and how he fits in the new scheme of apparently a new face of the Indianapolis Colts. Chad?
Well, I don't think Peyton has to worry too much about fitting into this scheme, because if he does come back, they will fit things around him. And if they deem him to be 100% healthy, we'll know by March. If he's paid the $28 million, there's no way they pay the $28 million if he's not close to 100% healthy. So that'll be a sure sign. And I don't think he would be the one fitting in. Yes, he would have to work with a different set of coaches. And let's keep in mind, I mean, Clyde Christensen is still around. I mean, the offensive playbook, that means the offensive playbook and the offensive play caller is still around. Yes, the offensive line coach is gone. A defensive line coach is gone. That was a shocker to me, John Teerling being gone. But I'm almost thinking that it's kind of like Bill Polian fostered and encouraged a system which was heavily a buddy system, pretty much a nepotistic system, in my opinion, because he had Chris Polian and Dennis Polian on the roster, and John Teerling had his son on the roster. And I don't think Bill Polian and John Teerling would have lost their jobs if not for insisting that their sons be on the staff. So that was a cultural thing that did not sit well with Ryan Grigson, in my opinion. And that's why he used a shovel instead of a scalpel to weed out the inept ones. Because John Teerling, his proficiency goes back to the John Randall days. So it's not like he's just a Polian puppet or a Polian implant. So for him to be dismissed had to be part of the culture Ryan Grigson was going to put in there. And so that's why Teerling and his son went. And I'm pretty sure Dennis Polian is somewhere there. Probably he's gone too. And most importantly, our strength and conditioning coach went away, which I like, because, I mean, it's like it was an injury parade for the last 5 years. I mean, it's too coincidental for us to be the most injured team the last 5 years and not make a move about it. So There are some good moves, but there are some questionable moves. But most of the moves, I think, is based on changing the culture of the organization, thinking ahead. But as far as Peyton Manning is concerned, if he comes back, they will make things work around him. And but they will add more pieces so that they'll give him more help with the with Gregson coming from the Eagles, who always invested draft picks on the offensive and defensive lines. I think they'll bolster the lines to be better if Gregson is drafting, in my opinion, something that Polian did not do early on in Peyton's prime. So.
Well, and certainly Bill Polian admitted later on after his dismissal that one of his things they would say to his demise was that he did not plan for a post-Peyton Manning era. All right, Michael Daly, real quickly before we take a break. Yesterday, Jim Irsay comes out with it to ESPN and says they'll definitely be drafting a quarterback no matter what happens with Peyton Manning. And he said they're either going to be drafting Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin III. Now, going back to what I was said earlier in my egotistical statement where I said on this show that I do not think that Andrew Luck will ever wear a Colts uniform. I think that for Jim Irsay, and you know me, I like to read in between the lines, for Jim Irsay to throw in Robert Griffin Jr. tells me that he and Ryan Grigson are very much contemplating, not drafting, but trading the draft pick for Andrew Luck and trying to pick up Robert Griffin III. Mr. Daly, what are your thoughts? What say you?
Yeah, I think that's a almost likely scenario. Guys, you know, they don't want to get rid of a guy named Peyton. You know, he's meant too much to this organization. He wants to stay here. He's a you know, great player, a fan favorite, won a Super Bowl. I think they would like to come up with a scenario to keep him. And I think it does make sense to go ahead and get in a real good quarterback, get rid of Luck where, or, you know, the pick for Luck where they can actually pick up. I mean, they could probably get a lot for that draft pick. And, you know, bring somebody like Griffin in that is going to be really good. And, you know, have a cake and eat it too, basically, with Manning. The thing that is kind of a stumbler, though, is if they are in a rebuilding phase, you know, then you're paying Manning a lot of money. And it's kind of hard to rebuild when you're stuffing away all your money in one spot. And maybe I see him restructuring his contract or something. I don't know. But, you know, there's so many different scenarios. I think they're going to, you know, during these upcoming months, they're going to try to figure out, you know, what scenario works best. The thing that's really on their side is, you know, they're not picking, they don't have the 20th pick or something. They know, you know, what pick they've got. They've got the number one. They will get the player that they want. It's just a matter of, you know, how to structure everything. So that makes their decisions a little bit easier. And, you know, if you know the history of the Colts, they kind of keep those things to themselves. They may talk a little bit about, you know, what might happen, what might not happen. But if you remember when they drafted Manning, it was between him and Ryan Leaf. And in hindsight, it was kind of obvious who was the best pick there, but they kept it to themselves and let the media just go on and on and on and on about what they should do and who was better. And I could see them doing that now.
Well, Michael, one thing I want to point out, and for you and for our listeners, there is no restructuring of the Peyton Manning contract. The options are very, very simple. A few things have got to happen. They keep Peyton Manning, they keep him on the roster, they move forward with him. They cut him or they trade him. Those are the only three things that can happen according to the new labor the players bargaining labor agreement that they came up with in the post lockout days. Basically, it says that Peyton Manning can the way the contract is worded now. And they cannot restructure it, so which means they are going to have to drop him, they're going to have to trade him, or they're going to have to keep him. So, you know, those are certainly –
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I didn't
that's right.
know that. that would make it tough to really hold on to them. If they're really in rebuilding, I mean, if they're looking at, you know, 5-11 seasons and things like that to try to rebuild them, it'd be a tough situation to see Manning being here unless he just was going to be basically the mentor for the up-and-coming quarterback.
The only thing I can think of is basically Manning signed a 1-year contract followed by a 4-year extension. So if they, I mean, like Tom said, they'll have to pay the $28 million if he has to stay with the Colts. But what they could do is the last 3 years of the contract, they can ask him to restructure and make it more cap friendly. And Carson Palmer as a number one pick sat for 1 year behind, I think it was Akili Smith or John Kitna. I think it was John Kitna, I think. So what they could do is basically restructure and then raise. Right now, Manning's trade value is shot. So let him play for another year, and 3 years later, I mean 1 year later, he can get Andrew Luck to be starting, and then at least showcase a year of good health, get the most you can get out of Peyton. And I would hate to see it a case of Joe Montana in a Chiefs uniform, but if we have to do it, we have to do it after 1 year. But I don't know if Tom Condon would, Peyton's agent would agree to that. He might ask for a no-trade clause if they want to restructure the next 3 years. So
okay.
it's all up in the air. So.
Well, and we certainly got a lot of time to talk about this, and certainly in the off season, and a lot of things to come up. And coming up here in the bottom of the hour, if you guys could stick around with us with Philip B. Wilson of the Indianapolis Star and Ed Kratz, we're going to really get into the conversation about Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, and also the new coaching change. And rumor has it, Jim Tressel has had his second interview with the Indianapolis Colts. We'll be right back to talk playoffs. That's right, playoffs.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions, work with them today.
Well, there was supposed to be a commercial there, guys. That's usually how it runs on a Saturday morning. That's always how it runs on a Saturday morning. But we'll try to throw that one in there in the next break. Well, we got about 30 more seconds before we have to go to our playoff. Man. Chad, you threw everything off kilter. We're going to put the blame on you today because it can't be me and my lousy board op today. Well, man, how about Eli Manning? He is on a roll, boys and girls. And I'm trying to load a soundbite from the game between the Giants and the Packers. But let's go ahead and dive right into this, and I'll find that soundbite. So, Chad, go ahead. Let's talk about. Let's start at with today's game, and then we'll move into tomorrow's game. So, what say you, Chad, on today's game?
Well, both games are tomorrow, Tom.
I thought we had a game today. See what you've done to me.
One is at 3:00 Eastern tomorrow. It's all conference championship game. Well, the other one is at 6:30.
Peter,
so.
You just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
I need help.
Yes, you do.
All
right. So,
let's talk about tomorrow's games then. Go ahead.
Playoffs, I mean, it's again, nice contrasting style of play between the Patriots and Ravens, and it's whoever can pressure Brady, I mean, without having to blitz too much, and that's going to be the key, and I don't know, it's like the Ravens have played tight ends pretty good throughout the year, not just one game or two throughout the year. I mean, I know that because whenever my players went against the Ravens in fantasy football, I used to analyze how tight ends have done. They haven't done really well, but then most teams have just one good tight end. So, Pats have two good tight ends, and just like Ravens tried to take out Chris Johnson versus the tight ends, remember a few years ago? They almost bent him in half or something. So I would not be shocked if the Ravens tried to take a cheap shot on Gronkowski or Hernandez down the middle. They'll get a flag. But if they can kind of put the fear of them going down the middle and set a tone, then they should probably keep the game close. If the Ravens keep the game close, I think their defense can win a very close one. But by no means it's going to be a repeat of what the Ravens did in Foxborough a few years ago, where they out-physical them and outmatched them and beat them by 14-plus points or something like that. So, but I do like the Ravens in a very close one. And I like the 49ers, to be honest with you, over the Giants. No matter how hot Eli is, there's rain forecast, and that's going to have an impact on the pass rush for the Giants, and it's going to fit right into the running game strength for the 49ers. And the 49ers, I mean, if you notice the Packers, if they were not playing from behind, their runs netted enough yards versus the Giants. They just couldn't run enough because they fell behind too much. So I think the 49ers, by keeping the game close, will be able to establish a very effective run game, and they'll win on the strength of being a more complete team.
Well, that's a perfect segue. I found my my mystery soundbite. Eli Manning, touchdown pass against the Green Bay Packers.
Towards the quarterback and pick up a first down. Eli Manning has converted a 3rd and 8, a 3rd and 10, and a 3rd and 11 already. On first down all day, wide open, pass complete. That's Nix. And Hakeem Nix inside the 10, touchdown Giants, no flag. Brought a three-man rush on that particular play. On this one, they're in base defense, and Eli Manning has plenty of time. Now they get the completion to Nix, but Charlie Pepper, the safety, comes in, and he's got to make that play. We see that around the league all year long. Safeties, linebackers trying to make tackles without using their arms. He thinks that a shoulder is going to be enough to get Nix to the ground. It's not. Big play, New York Giants.
A lot of the focus has been on Victor Cruz all season.
Well, and there you have it. That's a little bit of a soundbite from that game between Green Bay and the New York Giants. And I tell you what, I think that the New York Giants totally dismantled the Green Bay Packers. And I don't think the Green Bay Packers saw that happening out there. And here's the thing. The Giants have been in the playoff championship game 4 times and have won every single game. Guys, I think we're got to get suited up for Eli Manning coming here to Indianapolis. Michael Daly, what say you?
It's going to be the Giants and the Patriots. It's Giants, man. I agree that the Giants have looked Super Bowl bound since the end of the season. I didn't believe in the middle of the season. I really kind of had my doubts of figuring they're going to make the playoffs. But right there at the end of the year, they turn it on, and it's not only their Eli Manning. That defense has been hot. Again, in the last game, I mean, well, not the last game, but when they played Atlanta, Atlanta scored 2 points, and that was on a safety. So their defense actually held the Atlanta offense scoreless. And yeah, it's pretty hard to get past that. I know that I don't see that the 49ers don't have strong enough offense to get past that defense. I don't think. I think it's going to be a close game. I love what Jim Harbaugh is doing. I'd like to see the 49ers get to the Super Bowl. I think the Giants have got that look in their eye. They have that confidence. They're going to overcome anything and everybody. And the Patriots and Ravens, that really could go either way. But I do think I think Brady is out to prove himself right here. It's, you know, he's starting to get on the downside of his career. I think he hasn't won a Super Bowl for a while. He's been there a lot. He got a lot of Super Bowls early. I think he's his frame of mind seems to have changed. He seems to be so much more focused on it, as opposed to previous years where he thought maybe he's just going to get it just because he's going to be there and show up. I don't know. The Patriots defense has been their real weak point this year, and I think a lot of it's going to hinge on that. But they look a whole lot better in recent weeks than they did most of the season, though. I just think the Patriots are going to edge that out, and I think the Giants will. I think the Giants will win it all, too.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I like the 49ers this year, and I like the Giants. This is probably one of my hardest games to pick throughout the entire weekend, and this is what I like. I like seeing two teams. And I know this is just going to be a from the first snap, this is going to be a big battle on the field. And I really like the Giants and the 49ers. I think this is a great matchup. Really, I'm not going to be disappointed with whoever comes out a winner on this game. But I really like the 49ers. I'd like to see a Harbaugh Bowl here in Indianapolis. I really like the way the Giants are playing. And again, I won't be disappointed if the Giants get to the Super Bowl either. The Giants and the 49ers played earlier this season with San Francisco winning at home 27-20, and that was back on November 13th. And that game actually triggered New York's four-game slide. But at that point, Chad, New York did not have running back Ahmad Bradshaw in the first meeting, and for the second half was also missing a linebacker by the name of Michael Boley. Not Daly, but Boley.
Mm-hmm.
And, with Boley
watching
on the
sideline,
San Francisco tight ends Davis and Walker were able to do significant damage. I think we're looking at two different pictures from earlier this season and then the postseason. Chad, real quickly, then I want to move on over to the Patriots-Ravens game because that's another huge, huge game. Really, guys, what a great playoff season this has been, and I think it's going to be it's going to climax to an awesome Super Bowl right here in Indianapolis. So really, I think that no matter who gets into the Super Bowl, it's going to be a fantastic playoff weekend, and it's going to be a fantastic Super Bowl. Chad, what say you on the Giants and the 49ers?
Oh, it's going to be a battle, and it reminds me of a London game the Giants played versus the Dolphins. The Giants won 13-10. So I still think the 49ers run game that you didn't get to see in full bloom because they were in a shootout versus the Saints, I think you're going to see that more versus the Giants. I don't think the Giants are going to be able to pile up points on the 49ers that like they were able to against the Packers. Packers reminded me so much of the 2005 Colts. Tony Dungy's son died. I mean, their offensive coordinator's son died, and their 13-0 streak was also blown by an AFC West team. For us, the Chargers. For them, the Chiefs. And it's almost identical. The Packers were so built around that and around their quarterback, and Greg Jennings went down, and then he almost fumbles, just like you remember in Marvin Harrison in 2007. It happened. He was out for a long period. That's what I was thinking. It's like maybe it's not a blessing to get that first round bye like you think. The only team that has really played well with the first round bye, I mean, has been traditionally has been the New England Patriots, and even they have lost the last two before they got a gimme matchup with the Broncos. I mean, I'm almost thinking that having played the Broncos, their level might have gone down a bit. So it'll be a huge difference in level when they play the Ravens. And a lot of times, you don't know how good a defense is just because Joe Flacco played average versus a very good Texans defense. It's easy to underestimate Joe Flacco, and I don't be shocked if he comes and throws for 2 to 3 touchdowns in the Patriots game, and might help the Ravens win a close one. So just goes to show you it's a week-to-week thing. We know it is in the NFL, and the 49ers have been super consistent all year. And their special teams, I'm telling you, I mean, it's like, it is not like they're a more complete team than the Giants, in my opinion. And that's why I think the 49ers will prevail. So,
Well, I tell you what, also joining us in our conversation is my good friend, Mr. Ed Kratz, from Calkins Media at PhillyBurbs.com, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Welcome to the Ballast, Mr. Ed. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. A little snowy back here in Philadelphia today, but other than that, doing well.
Man, we got a little bit of snow ourselves, so we're talking a little bit about that. We're standing by, guys. As soon as Philip B. Wilson of the Indianapolis Star gives us a call, we're going to jump into some Colts conversation and talk about the up-and-coming quarterback situation, obviously, and the coaching change. But let's talk a little bit about, and we'll start with you, Ed, let's talk a little bit about this big game between the Patriots and the Ravens. What a marquee matchup this is. What say you on this game?
Well, I think 2 weeks ago when I was on with you, Tom, I picked the Ravens and the 49ers to make it to the Super Bowl. And I did that based on the fact that I think they were the two best defenses coming in. And even though all season long in the NFL offense ruled the day, I think that when the stakes get a little bit higher, defenses tend to stand a little taller. And then in this case, I love the Ravens' defense. It's going to be a very difficult task, obviously, to go into Foxborough and knock off the Patriots and Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady has 15 career playoff victories. He's looking for number 16 tomorrow, which would tie him for the most all time with Joe Montana. So that's going to be difficult for this Ravens defense to go in there and completely shut the Patriots down. I think they can do a good job limiting what they're able to do. The question is going to be, in my opinion, is if the Baltimore offense can generate enough points to outscore the Patriots. Obviously, they did not play their best game last week in beating the Texans, particularly on offense. Which leads me to believe that maybe because they didn't play their best last week, that they've really got something to prove this week, and they're going to come out and they're going to be clicking on all cylinders. So I like the Ravens. I think they're going to find a way to make it happen. I know they're a touchdown underdog, one touchdown underdog, but I think somehow, some way, the Ravens are going to go in there and find a way, and I think it's going to be they're going to rally around Flacco. All week there was some talk, some sniping back and forth with Ed Reed, their future Hall of Fame safety, and the quarterback, Joe Flacco, saying that Flacco needs to step up and do a better job. And I think they're going to rally around Flacco, and I honestly think they're going to find a way to get it done. It's going to be fun, though. It's going to be a great game. It's a great way to start off the championship weekend. It's the first game at 3 o'clock, and I'll be parked in front of my TV set watching it for sure.
Well, and I think it's definitely going to be a fantastic game. Joining us is Mr. Ed Kratz of Calkins Media and PhillyBurbs.com, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Very familiar with our new general manager here in Indianapolis. We're standing by for it with Mr. Philip B. Wilson. He just sent me a text. He's running a few minutes late, but he's going to join us. Mr. Michael Daly, one of our fantasy football experts that joined us during the fantasy football huddle, is joining us for the conversation. Mr. Michael Daly, what are your thoughts on New England and Baltimore Ravens?
I just think it's, like I said earlier, I think it's New England. I think they, the championship teams have this way about them. It's more their attitude. You can break down the way they play and everything and you know, what kind of offense, what kind of defense, and it all makes a huge difference. But what's otherwise a too close to call contest, it comes down to that championship mentality. I think New England has almost got it this year. I think the Giants do have it. I think they're going to mill edge. They're going to be at home. I just see them squeaking it out. But I don't know. I mean, it really can go either way, though. Joe Flacco's got something to prove. I mean, I think Joe Flacco's on the hot seat for this one. I mean, not that his job's in danger or anything like that, but he is pressured to make something happen here.
Well, Michael, we got to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be joining Philip B. Wilson, IndianapolisStar.com, of course, Ed Kratz of Talking Media, and PhillyBurbs.com. Going to be talking about that new coaching change in the Indianapolis Colts and number 18 in his future with the Indianapolis Colts. You're listening to The Balance of the Balance Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio across the United States. So glad you could join us.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
The Indianapolis Colts have their own $6 million man, or more like $100 million man, $28 million they're going to have to come up with if they decide to keep Mr. Peyton Manning. Obviously, they've made a lot of changes out there, and we're going to get right to that discussion with Mr. Philip B. Wilson of the IndianapolisStar.com and Ed Kratz of Calkins Media and PhillyBurbs.com. But real quickly, I want to thank one of our new sponsors, Terry's Indy Pet Service. I'll tell you what, these guys do everything. They will come to your house, babysit your dogs, your cats. You don't have to take it to a kennel. They'll even take your – if you're at work and you're afraid you're going to miss a vet appointment, they'll take them to that. They'll come and they'll even do poo duty. They'll clean up everything. They'll give them baths. They'll clean their ears. They'll do everything from mice to cats to birds to snakes. So give Terry Indy's Pet Service a call today in Indianapolis. And I tell you what, she's taking care of my pets every time we leave town. And I wouldn't trust my children with anybody but Terry's Indy Pet Service, 317-410-3377. 317-410-3377. And Terry's going to give you a discount if you tell them you heard it right here on The Balance. All right, Mr. Philip B. Wilson of the IndianapolisStar.com, the foremost expert and on the front lines down there at West 56th Street in Indianapolis. What say you, sir? What is going on? Help us sift through the maze. Go ahead, sir.
I think that dead pet thing sounds really cool. I wish I lived closer to you guys because that's a great idea. That I wish Terry nothing but the best. That sounds like a really cool cool deal because I've had dogs my whole life, and you always have to plan vacations, you know, and think, okay, what are we going to do with the dogs? What are we going to do? Who are we going to watch them? And I hate boarding them. So that's a great idea. That's outstanding. Anyway,
well,
sorry,
there you go.
We're
going to make Philip B. Wilson our official celebrity spokesperson. When I'm out talking to sponsors, I'm going to say, hey, I've got a guy here that will actually do a live read for you on our air.
Yeah, well, it just is cool. I mean, I'm a dog guy, so I thought, man, that's a great idea. I wish Terry the best. That's a great idea.
Awesome. Yeah, we do want to talk about some quotes, so let's start there at the top. Joining us also is Ed Kratz of PhillyBurbs.com and Calkins Media, who is a beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, very familiar with our new GM. All seems to be all business, Mr. Phil, and he is literally cleaning house. So let's talk about that for a little bit. He's cleaning house, got rid of Jim Caldwell. Rumor has it Jim Tressel's interviewed twice for the position. So what say you, Mr. Phil?
Well, they're still going through the motions here of just talking to guys. I mean, I don't think they're serious yet about anybody they've talked to. That's just my guess. I think Jerry Gray was an interview to satisfy or honor the Rooney Rule. I thought that Mike Zimmer from Cincinnati might have been the first serious candidate. Tressel, I'm curious about because, you know, he was a consultant and, you know, Jimmy flew his plane down there to Sarasota, Florida to talk to him. And I just, you know, it would surprise me a little bit if they went that way only because there would be a tremendous backlash because of the man's character issues the way he left Ohio State. And I grew up in Ohio. I'm a Buckeye. I can tell you his record and how he coaches. You won't find probably a better guy based on the numbers on the sheet. But we know that it goes beyond what we see on a sheet or on the field. There is something called character that factors into this decision.
All right, Ed Kratz, do you have any thoughts on that or any questions for Philip B. Wilson, who's down on the front lines with the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah, well, it seems to me, and you know, maybe Philip can chime in on this. Is I think the Colts would seem to want to go in the direction of hiring an offensive-minded type person. I don't know if Jim Tressel fits that bill if he was an offensive or a defensive coach in college, but with the Colts holding the number one pick, and it looks like it's going to be Andrew Luck. It seems to me that the Colts probably would want to go in the direction of somebody that knows how to put a competent offense and for him to operate in. And Jerry Gray, you know, the defensive coordinator for the Titans, I don't think fits that bill. But, you know, we'll see. Mike Zimmer was an offensive man, I think.
Defensive coordinator.
He was defensive coordinator, yeah. So
yeah. Yeah.
I'm not real sure he fits the bill either. I think that they really will go in the offensive direction with this hire. At least that's my opinion. I think that's the way they really need to go if they're planning on bringing Andrew Luck in number one. Philip, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you make a really good point here. I think initially our reaction to Jim Irsay's comments in the press conference, he referred to wanting to have balance in the cap on the roster, wanting to have it more defensive than it had been in the past, that so much had been spent on offense. So we all jumped the gun and thought, well, he's going to go defense, and we thought he wants to rebuild his defense. But, you know, Tressel was an offensive guy at Ohio State. He called the plays. I still can see him walking the sideline with a flip card. He was all about that. And so he would fit that bill, and the more we look at it, the more we think that, you know, especially if Peyton's not going to be here, you have to be certain that whoever it is, they're going to be able to, you know, to work and teach and have Andrew Luck learn as much as possible, as quickly as possible, but also not not confuse him or you know, stop the development, with too much. I mean, guys, a lot of times to come to the NFL, and it's so complicated, the playbooks are so thick, and one of the first things they have a trouble trying to remember, if you can believe it, is just going out and playing. I think you make a very valid point, and I won't be a bit surprised if that's why Tressel's gotten such a serious look, and that even risk, you know, the backlash, which, again, I thought the world of the guy until he screwed up and covered up his little mess at Iowa State, and I still know he can coach. I just don't know how you get around the fallout. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it doesn't matter. Because, in fact, he's a great football coach. Maybe that's all that does matter. But Ryan Grigson said leadership over and over and over again, and I know some people here would probably question that. How do you say leadership when you hire a guy who writes self-help clean living books and lies to the NCAA and covers up a mess, you know, that's been going on a little while as far as, you know, trading tattoos or trading things for tattoos and other stuff. So, I don't know. I'm a little conflicted, as you can tell. I went through a little period of grieving and trying to accept. I mean, I'm starting to wear my Ohio State stuff again now, but for a while there, I was a little ticked off.
Yeah, and, you know, Tressel's troubles actually date back to his days at Youngstown State when, you know, he ran into some issues back coaching that program in Ohio. And,
familiar with that, too.
I was a little surprised, frankly, when Ohio State hired him in the first place, but then years went by and the program seemed to be doing well. And, you know, I think when you look at college and then you look at the NFL, I'm not sure how much of that does matter, to be honest, you know, as far as the backlash go. I mean, really, if you can win games, I think that's all that the fans are going to care about. If you come in here and win and get us into the playoffs and make a run at the Super Bowl, I think all would be forgotten. That's just my opinion. That might not be the case. But
you cover the Eagles, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, so I made this joke in an email. It wasn't a joke, really. I said, well, you know, lying, we have NFL teams lie to us every week, and they call it gamesmanship. So, you know, I mean, come on. Nobody's telling us straight talk, right? And I think Andy Reid's a good coach, and I know he's had a lot of good coaches over there, but I'm sure you get the same thing over there a little bit. Maybe not as much as we've had it, but.
A little bit? Well, you're being kind there. Tressel might be the perfect coach for the Colts. Then, if that's the case, you know, he's a proven grade A liar, right?
Well, and he does know how to call a game. He does.
Yes.
He's outstanding on the X's and O's in offense. He is. There's no doubt in my mind. So his college record, I mean, is phenomenal. He built the beast at Ohio State. He built him back, and I have no doubt about that. That's why I guess I'm conflicted on him.
Yeah, again, with the quarterback situation with Tressel, I mean, has he really developed a solid – I mean, he's obviously solid quarterbacks have come through Ohio State, but has he developed any next-level quarterbacks that have come through there? I know Terrell Pryor was a, you know, blue-chip recruit, and, you know, I'm not sure he really got any better under Tressel. So you'd be looking at a guy you'd bring in that you really want to work with Andrew Luck. Now, maybe Tressel brings in that person if he gets hired as the head coach.
Yeah, I'm not sure he has either. And the other thing is, Jim's only been in an NFL press box or media or NFL booth for half a season. You know, I don't know if that qualifies you to make that jump, but he's not going back to college for any time soon. I think 5 years, the NCAA said. So who knows? We'll see. Boy, it would just blow my mind if they did it, but we'll see.
All right, we're talking to Philip B. Wilson of IndianapolisStar.com, foremost expert on the Indianapolis Colts, and also Ed Kratz, foremost expert on the Philadelphia Eagles, who knows our new general manager very well. And also joining us, who always joins us for our fantasy football huddle, is Mr. Michael Daly. Michael, do you have any questions for our two experts on the Colts or what's going on with the Indianapolis Colts?
Not really right now. I'm just kind of taking it all in.
Okay. Well, let's
I know I'm a great contributor when I do stuff like that, but hey, you know.
hey, that's fine. That's why I said, Michael, I'd like to have you on the show as a contributor. So there you go. Phil,
Time to talk.
I have a question for Ed, if you let me, if you don't mind.
I don't mind, Phil. Go right ahead, sir.
Super. I mean, you know, I once we heard about Gregson and we read up on him. I read a lot of stuff on him, and I know a lot of times it's almost like when someone dies, everybody just wants to say something good. Somebody just gets a new job, they all want to say something good. But I seriously read an awful lot about how this guy was definitely on the move up, and he impressed. And these are media types that had no reason to gush about him, that they knew him on the scouting trail, they knew him from the college games, the workouts, and all that. And he had that something special. And I guess I'm wondering if you've had any chance to know this kid or know this guy. And whether he did have a buzz about him in the Eagles organization, as I'm reading.
Yeah, you know, he climbed the ladder in the Eagles organization. I had only met him a handful of, maybe twice, I guess you could say, and our conversations were brief. The Eagles pretty much don't make people like that available to talk to.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. I guess that's the way everything's shrouded in secrecy, but... you know, as 2 years as the director of player personnel, you know, he kind of was the head of scouting the talent and evaluating some of the talent that was brought in front of him. And you could make the case that the last couple of years with the Eagles, their drafts haven't been all that spectacular up high in the first couple rounds, but they seem to have mined some pretty good talent late in the draft. And, you know, Gregson got some credit for that. He is, like you said, a no-nonsense type of guy, and, you know, his star was on the rise. You know, when you look at – and you read up about him, Phillip, so you saw when the Rams hired him in 99, they went to the Super Bowl that season, and then when the Eagles hired him in 04, the Eagles went to the Super Bowl too. So, he's a guy that kind of comes in and puts his stamp on things, and that's, I guess, the kind of guy Jim Irsay was looking for.
Yep, he's definitely doing that right now.
Yeah, and you know, the transition into Peyton Manning, I think the same thing. He's been cleaning house on the coaching front, and I think the same thing is going to happen with Peyton. I don't know, Phillip, you're closer to that, and maybe you can speak to it later here, but that's just my opinion. I think that's the next step here.
Now, Phillip, I've heard you. Obviously, you've been on every media outlet possible here in the local media and in various different national media and even international media. You're a well sought out man when it comes to knowledge of the Indianapolis Colts, and you get asked this question every single time, so I don't want to be any different than anybody else, but does Peyton Manning come back to the Indianapolis Colts next year?
Yeah, and that's the one that's been, you know, everybody does ask me, and I've been as conflicted on it as anybody in this market, and we've got some good people that I work with. And I tell them how divided we are. You know, one writer who's covered this team from day one in Indy says you stick with Peyton because he's a known commodity and you know what you have with him. Our columnist says you go with Andrew Luck. You make the hard, but, well, he doesn't think it's a hard decision. You make the sentimental decision to say it's time for Peyton to go, and you build around him. I've waffled so much that my position, and we never talked about it before we made our positions known, I said you give Peyton every chance to finish his career here, but you still pass on Luck, you take Luck, you try and have both. And my position's probably maybe more, you know, it's easier to shoot holes in mine. Here's where I am right now, and I've been waffling really bad. I've been, I'm not standing on a firm bridge here. I'm not standing on firm ground. It feels like an earthquake because the more I find out and I talk to Mike Chappell, our colleague, the more it scares me the risk the Colts would take. I know fans are sentimental. I know how many 18 jerseys are in the city. But the fact of the matter is Peyton turns 36 in March, and $28 million team option kicks in 4 years of a contract. And there's so much risk involved, so much risk. First of all, there's still people that think he'll never play or will never be healthy enough to play. Secondly, if he does try and come back, isn't the same, and retires, let's say after this first year of this 4 years, his cap hit in 2013 would be $28 million. Now, it comes down each year after that, say he plays 2 years and retires, but still, it's astronomical. I mean, From a dollars and cents standpoint, I'm almost to the point, and I hate to admit it, I'm almost to the point where I'm going to agree with our columnist Bob Kravitz and, and say, I can't blame them for risking financial suicide by paying him, even though the sentimentalist who roots the story and has seen this guy from day one do, you know, a lot of incredible things. He wants to see a happy ending. He wants to see this guy, you know, finish it off the way he'd want to finish it off. But as we see so often in sports, it doesn't usually end that way for many. And it doesn't end the way we want it in life. It doesn't end that way the way we want it in sports. So as you can tell, I'm starting to lean really hard toward it's going to be a tough decision, or as Bob Kravitz says, really, it's the smart decision. And we'll see what they do. I'm not convinced he's healthy yet, and I don't know if he's 80 or 90% by March 8th. How do you commit that then? I mean, I just don't see how they do it. But I'll leave the door just cracked open, just a hair, so that if he does come back and plays great and says, all you people wrote me off, I could say, well, I didn't, Peyton. I still wanted to see you here for a year, but yeah, but you said take Andrew Luck, too. Well, yeah, because you see the guy playing college. He's great.
I got one question, though.
Go ahead, Mike.
Between Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin, do you see either one of them being more conducive to Peyton Manning staying and maybe playing for a little while, the other person being, the other quarterback, the new quarterback being understudy, for a little while, the old, like the Favre and Rodgers thing? Or, I mean, what do you see either one of them giving some kind of sign as to which way they're going to go on Peyton?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's a lesser known point that was brought up by Archie, ironically, Peyton's father. You know, everybody just rushed to judgment and said, well, gee, yeah, the Aaron Rodgers thing worked in Green Bay with Favre, but they didn't like each other. They weren't, you know, it wasn't the best of relationship. Well, you know, we were all concerned that would be a problem. Peyton would be, insecure or sensitive and would hate this and all this. And Archie Manning tried to make rounds here a while back, or he did make rounds and for a cause, but was also saying on Mike and Mike and everywhere else that, you know, don't do a disservice to both these guys. They both deserve to play. Well, what Archie also said was he just talked to Oliver the night before, so we know that was the Manning message on behalf of both families. What Archie also said was, you know, Peyton knows Andrew. Andrew's come to the Manning Passing Academy down here in New Orleans the last 2 years or whatever, and they're friends. And I went, wait a second. There's already an existing relationship here. You've just told me that this would work because they like each other, they know each other, or at least Peyton respects the kid. So I think there's no question in my mind that if Irsay can have his cake and eat it too, that's the way he wants to go, because he knows Peyton will be professional. And on a personal level, he's not going to be a jerk to a guy that he's helped mentor along already at his passing academy in the last 2 years. So it's an interesting tidbit, and I don't think Archie thought that would get pulled out of his chat tour. But, boy, when I heard that, I went, bingo. You know, there's no doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind that could play a role in it.
Now, we got the final question here, and I'm going to go ahead and yield that over to Ed Kratz of PhillyBurbs.com and Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, who knows our brand new general manager well, Ryan Grigson. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. Do you think that he's looking more toward a defensive-type coach? And of course, Phil, you could chime in as well. But do you think he's looking more toward a defensive-type coach? And should we be reading between the lines that perhaps that Ryan would say, hey, we're going to waive our first pick to Andrew Luck and pick up a defensive-type player, because obviously the Eagles have always been known for their defense? Or do you think they just threw in the name Grigson just to throw people off the scent? Go ahead, Ed.
Well, the Eagles were known for their defense until this year, actually, when they brought in Juan Castillo from the offensive side of the ball to run the defense. But I see what you're saying. I think Grigson was brought in to kind of you know, be the hard liner in all of this and clean house. Now, initially I wouldn't have said that, but by his actions these first couple of weeks here, it seems to be the case. And, you know, I think Peyton Manning could make it easier for everyone if he decides to just go ahead and retire if he feels his neck is healthy enough. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I know Rob Lowe, of all people, came out and said, you know, that he heard
that. Oh, the great voice of wisdom.
Well, that was when Wikipedia was down, right? So we were all kind of scrambling for time. But
yeah, one of our TV guys here had a great line. He tweeted right after that that John Stamos came out and said Dan Orlovsky just demanded a trade.
That's beautiful. So I think, you know, to answer your question, Tom, I think they're looking for an offensive mind, and, you know, Philip probably knows better than I do, but I honestly believe that if they're going to bring Luck in, and I don't think they're going to waive their rights to draft Andrew Luck.
Nope.
I'm not sure there's a defensive player out there, actually, that would rise to the standards of being the number one pick and trade out of that spot. I guess they could do that, but, boy, it's going to cost some team an awful lot. And Mike Ditka is no longer in the league to trade his entire draft to move up like he did back in the day when he got Ricky Williams in New Orleans. So I think they're going to stay put. I think they're going to take Luck, and I think they're going to bring in an offensive line to kind of groom Luck to bring him along. Phillip, I heard the name Brad Childress thrown out
there. Yeah, he's been thrown out there. Yes, he has. I think you're right. I think you're right. I think they're going to take Luck, no doubt, and then we'll see. But I do think that they're committed to rebuilding the defense also.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're gonna have to call that an end to the conversation. Philip B. Wilson of the IndianapolisStar.com, so glad that you could join us. It's always an honor to have you on board. Where can people find you and your masterpieces?
You're so kind to me. I appreciate that. I don't know if I live up to that, but I try. My blog, Bouncing Off Phil B, is at IndyStar.com. I also am on Twitter at PWilson24, and yes, I Facebook as well, Philip B. Wilson, and I accept everybody as long as you don't swear at me and you're not mean to anybody else. I mean, you can tell me I'm a dummy, and I don't mind that. So thank you again for having me. Cheers.
Thank you. And Mr. Ed Kratz, where can people find your work and your masterpieces?
Well, they can find me at phillyburbs.com. My blog is there also, and that's where my articles run. And I'm also on Twitter at KratzE. It's KRACZE. So I accept all comers, too, so feel free to reach out to me.
And see, all this time I thought I was special when you followed me on Twitter, but I guess not.
I love it. I love all the Indiana basketball stuff. They need to pull out of this little downturn they're in, but I think they'll do it. I think they'll be fine.
Well, we're getting ready to talk with Jimmy the intern about that very same subject. And Evan Williams of Bleeding Golden and Black from Purdue University. So, guys, we'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network. Thanks, thanks for joining us, Ed.
Thank you.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions, work with them today.
All right. welcome back to the Ballots. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you could join us on a very cold Saturday morning. Want to also thank our very new sponsor, Miss Terry's Indy Pet Service here in Indianapolis. I tell you what, guys, and you know what, Philip B. Wilson of the Indianapolis Star was just hearing this spot, and he says, you know what, I think I like to use Terry's Pet Service. They do everything. They come to your house, they give your dogs a bath, they do poo duty, they clean the ears, they do nail cutting, they will even take your pets to the vet. You can even do this, you can even bring your pet to Terry's house for a sleepover. She will also take your pets to the doggy park. She will walk them. She will groom them. I tell you what, she will do everything for you. All I'm saying is Indy's Pet Care Service in Indianapolis, they love the balance and they love pets. 317-410-3377, 317-410-3377. Give Jerry a call. She's going to give you a very special discount just because you told her that you heard Tom tell you about it on the Balance. Well, guys, I'm not as good as Gary Snyder, Jimmy, but, you know, I'm working on it. I'm working on those long live reads that I will get to be as good as Gary Snyder on the Gary Snyder Show. Jimmy, the intern, Jimmy Kavanaugh, and Evan Williams joins us now. We're going to spend the next hour talking about some hoops, Big Ten basketball, IU basketball, Purdue, and everything in between. Mr. Jimmy, I tell you what, brother, what in the world is going on with the Indiana Hoosiers? And Evan, are you with us as well, right?
I'm here, Tom.
All right. And Mr. Jimmy, let's start with you. And I certainly want to break down this up-and-coming matchup between IU and Purdue. But I want to talk a little bit about Indiana Hoosiers. Did somebody steal their mojo? What I want to know is where are the Space Jam characters when you need them, buddy?
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what. The way that this season has gone has not necessarily surprised me. At least the recent collapse hasn't. The heights that they were at before losing that game to Minnesota was something that no fan was expecting. I don't think people were ready for this team to take a national leap into the top 10 in, you know, the awareness of the United States this early. But, you know, the loss to Minnesota, I have told this to Gary, I've told this to Jim Brunner, that the way that these guys came into that Minnesota game, their attitude looked different on the court. Jordan Hulls admitted afterwards that they didn't play with the edge that they needed to, and it felt different at Assembly Hall. Fans came into that game, it seemed like almost expecting a victory, and would have been disappointed if they didn't get one. And not just that, but they were almost assuming. Not expecting, but assuming is the word I was looking for there. And when that happened, it was a totally different feel. I don't think the team had felt that way. I don't think the fans had felt that way. It allowed them to get tripped up by a Minnesota team that should not have beaten them at home, even as well as they did play. All the offensive rebounds they got, IU still made some mistakes and didn't play with the edge they needed to. Then, you know, just looking forward to the next couple games for them, Ohio State was not going to be a road win anyway. They were going to lose that game regardless of how well they were playing. I don't think there's a team in the country that, or at least not in the Big Ten, that can beat Ohio State at home without some really lucky breaks going their way. But to lose at Nebraska on the road the way they did, that was really reminiscent of last year. It looked like they tightened up down the stretch. They definitely played with an edge, with intensity. But for the last 14 or so minutes of the game, it didn't look like the problem was that they didn't care. The problem looked more like they cared too much. And that's really what happened all of last year when they tightened up down the stretch, couldn't make enough plays to win. These guys have got to find their mojo back. Like you said, find the Space Jam characters, get their talent back, and find a way to resume playing the way they did before. You know, they beat Ohio State playing a certain way. They beat Kentucky playing a certain way. And if they can't play that way for the rest of the season, expect this kind of thing to continue because there are no easy games in the Big Ten.
All right, Evan, what are your thoughts about what's happened to IU? And certainly we want to talk a little bit about what your thoughts about what's going on with Purdue. So what say you, Mr. Evan Williams?
Well, I think that these recent losses by IU is just kind of showing some of the people that they're not invincible this year. You know, being in Indiana, I went to high school with a lot of IU guys. You know, I know a lot of IU guys, and they've just been – you know, rubbing everything in my face this year. But, you know, I mean, this shows that there's no easy win in the Big Ten. You know, they went to Nebraska, who's probably one of the bottom two teams in the Big Ten, and lose on the road. So I think this shows, I mean, you can't take any game for granted on the road in the Big Ten. And they've got another tough stretch coming up. You know, they've got Wisconsin on the road. You know, that's never an easy game in the Kohl Center. And they've got Iowa coming up at home too, who's been playing pretty well this year. And then they travel to Ann Arbor, and then they come up on the 4th to Purdue. And, I mean, that's a pretty tough stretch of games right there. So they're really going to have to get back to the way they've been playing if they want to be successful.
And you know what? I absolutely agree. And I know that, Jimmy, you follow the Big Ten quite often. And you know what? I have to admit, as an IU fan, it does take great pride to be able to prod Purdue just a little bit, just to be able to poke that into the cage and poke that bear just a little bit. But that said, Jimmy, what are your thoughts about Purdue? They just don't seem to be clicking on all four cylinders this year. They seem to be – something seems to be missing. And certainly, Jimmy, you can chime in, and Evan, you can certainly rebuttal to this. But I want to know, something's missing there. There's not the chemistry between Painter and the players. I'm not sure. So, Jimmy, maybe you can go first, and then Evan, go ahead.
Well, I haven't followed Purdue as closely as I've followed Indiana this year, but it seems like their biggest problem is that they no longer have Juwan Johnson and Etuan Moore on the roster. And those are two All-American candidates, two of the best players in the Big Ten, and really two of the best Big Ten players, certainly of the last 5 years, who both managed to stay on the same team. Having Robbie Hummel has really helped them out, because I don't know where they would be without him. I mean, you know, Evan, correct me if I'm wrong here, but looking at this Purdue team, you know, some of my Purdue friends said, oh, no, Tyrone Johnson has the opportunity to be that scorer behind Robbie Hummel. I don't see it. I haven't seen him step up and show any consistency as a scorer. Ryan Smith is a spot-up shooter. Doesn't really bring much else to the table. Kelsey Barlow can defend, but I don't know how I feel about him as a scorer. I don't know how good of a Big Ten team you can be when you have one established scoring threat. And I think that's really Purdue's main problem. They still seem to play pretty tough, but there's only so much toughness can bring you when you have one experienced scorer who's not going to bring it, you know, every night, put up 30 points a game. He's not that kind of guy. And that seems to be Purdue's main problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely losing Juwan Johnson and Etuan Moore is a huge loss. The chemistry that they have, the chemistry they brought to the team, the leadership, and just the talent level was just a tremendous loss for Purdue. But really, with Hummel's actually been struggling as of late. And, I mean, last game against Iowa, we had five guys scoring double figures. You know, Lewis Jackson had 14, Ryan Smith had 12, Barlow had 11, and Tyrone Johnson had 10. And with Tyrone Johnson, he's had some struggles this year, but also he came off surgery in the summer. He had a fracture or something with his knee, and he had surgery on the surface. He's still kind of getting back into it. But in the future, I definitely think he's going to be one of the top scorers, not only for Purdue, but in the Big Ten. He's got lots of talent. He has a great ability to drive and draw fouls. Not only if he can improve his free throw shooting, then he can be a really big threat for this team. But I think because of Hummel, you're right, Hummel isn't the guy who's going to score the points. You know, he's a very good player, and he brings a lot, and he's a very important piece of this team. But I think Purdue just has to have consistent scoring from the other guys. You know, there isn't that guy who's going to come out and score 30 points a night, 25 points a night. It's just got to be consistent across the board for them to be successful.
Well, and you – go ahead,
I was going to say, just following up on that, so some mental exercise that I've been talking to some Purdue buddies about. Imagining this team had Robbie Hummel not had all those injury problems and had last year's team. You know, I'm of the opinion that last year's team with Robbie Hummel would have been a legitimate Final Four national title contender. I have that much respect for Purdue. I thought they were outstanding. I love Robbie Hummel as a player, especially how he complimented Moore and Johnson. But this year's team without Robbie Hummel, I feel, would have been headed straight towards the Big Ten cellar, because there aren't a whole lot of great teams. There are a whole lot of really good teams in the Big Ten. And you know, just the talent level that Purdue would have had, comparing it to a Penn State or a Nebraska, they would have looked really similar, and I wonder if you agree with that.
I don't think they would have been towards the cellar. They would have been towards the bottom half, I think, because Hummel does bring that much. But in some of the big games this year, Hummel hasn't been a factor, and they've done fine without him. I mean, in the Illinois game, they beat a very good Illinois team. Hummel had like 5 points, and the other guy stepped up. The Minnesota game on the road, which Purdue won, Lewis Jackson stepped up, had 23 points. I mean, I think they definitely would have had some more struggles this year had Hummel not been injured and not returned this year. But I don't think they would have been in the same category as Nebraska or Penn State.
Well, guys, I'll tell you what, we got a great matchup coming up, and this is one of the reasons why I invited the two of you on at the same time. Just kidding. It's all in fun. It's all great, great rivalry. And one of the biggest games of the year for IU and Purdue is coming up on what's the day, Jimmy? I'm sorry, my computer is freezing up. It always happens when I talk to Jimmy the intern. When does IU Purdue play?
Well, it's in a couple of weeks. I believe it's a road game against Purdue. I can't remember the exact date. It's still a little bit in the future. I'm still looking ahead to Wisconsin on Thursday. I'm making that drive up, so unfortunately, I can't give you the exact date right now.
Evan, do you know what the exact date is?
Yeah, it's February 4th, and it's at Purdue.
Well, there you go. And so it's going to be at Purdue. Well, we'll get to that game, but I wanted to make sure that I had an opportunity to talk with both of you about that game. So, and I know it's a little bit further ahead, and I know we got Wisconsin to talk about, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little all around the Big Ten. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on the student chemistry, because you both are students at both prospective schools. Jimmy, you're at IU. Evan, you're at Purdue. You're both students. So take the media aspect out of it and put the student flair into it. How big of a game is this? Go ahead, Evan.
Well, this is a huge game for the students. I mean, I think Jimmy would agree that for both Purdue and IU, it's all about bragging rights. You know, who has the right to rub it in the other fan's face for the next coming year? It's a very important game. I mean, I know at Purdue we all love to knock off IU, especially because of the great season they've been having so far. And, you know, it's been quite a while since IU has beat Purdue, so I think all the Purdue fan base would like to keep that streak going.
Okay, Jimmy, now obviously I'm an IU alumni, so I know what playing Purdue used to mean when I was a student way back when, a long time ago. But go ahead. Jimmy, what does it mean to the students now to play Purdue? Is it still as big of a game as Evan's talking about at the Purdue campus?
Well, it's a massive game, and I think it might bear some more significance with how first, IU is doing a great job, and secondly, how they struggled as of late. I think the Purdue game is going to have major, major implications for the fans just trying to gauge this team, because if they win, I think people will be, you know, all will be forgiven with how they've struggled to win these past few games. And if they lose, I think everything just snowballs, because like Evan said, IU hasn't beaten Purdue in a while. And on the road, Mackey Arena is not going to be an easy place to play. So I think people expecting, no one's expecting to go in there and just hand Purdue's lunch to them. But yeah, that's going to be a very difficult game. I think it's totally realistic. I don't, at this point, expect IU to go in there and win the way they're playing. And, you know, another loss there, that brings it a whole lot more pressure on the heads of the players and onto the team in general.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Big Ten, guys. Obviously, huge loss Indiana has had in the Big Ten and is really starting to go downward. So, Jimmy, let's start with you. Where is Indiana, and why are they having such a big struggle in the Big Ten? And give us a snow globe look, if you will, of Indiana and the Big Ten in general.
Well, first things first, I think it's very significant that we're talking about Indiana to lead off a Big Ten discussion, because in years past that would have not been the case. But at this point in the year, IU really earned it with their early play, playing Michigan State tough. They lost by 15, but were really in that game for most of the time, actually led for a significant portion of the game before Michigan State came back. But, you know, they beat Michigan, they beat Ohio State, they beat Penn State on the road, which may not look like a great win, but I'll tweak Evan a little and say we didn't lose by 20 points over there. But, yeah, 3-1 to start the Big Ten was a pretty solid start. And then, like I said, against Minnesota, wheels kind of came off, and they're not playing the way they were playing earlier. And with this team, they have not shown the indication that they can come out and play loose after meeting that first stretch of adversity. So really, I don't know how much IU is going to be in the Big Ten picture as far as contention for the title goes. Right now, they stand. Right now, they stand at that 3-4 mark. They've lost three straight games in conference, and it's really troubling to see that. Now, as for a snow globe picture, that's a perfect analogy because everything's been shaken up recently. When Illinois just lost to Penn State, Illinois was leading the conference. Penn State was at the very bottom of the conference. Penn State beat them. So, if there's a lesson to be learned there, it's that no one knows what's going to happen. I mean, you know, Michigan State was upset by Northwestern. Michigan dropped a game. It's a total cluster you-know-what in this conference right now just because all these teams are good. Coaches like saying that all the teams in the Big Ten can beat just about any other team. This year it's happened. Every team in conference, you know, you can make a circle from the different wins and losses of the year. You know, Iowa beating a team, that team beating someone else. Everyone's been a part of that circle, beating and losing to someone else. So it's going to be fascinating to see it unfold. I'm going to have a hard time picking against Ohio State just because their two losses have been to a still-clicking Indiana team on the road with their best three players in foul trouble and an Illinois team that got probably the best Big Ten performance of the decade. I'd argue for Brandon Paul, shot eight three-pointers as a 30% shooter, scored 40-plus points. It's going to be hard to overtake Ohio State, and I think when Water Wheat reaches its level, they'll be right there. But Michigan State's been very impressive. Michigan can beat and lose to anyone on any given night. And I'm still loath to exclude Wisconsin, even though they've had their fair share of tough play. But, yeah, I think the top three teams are going to end up being Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan. At least that's the order of teams that I'm most scared of in this conference.
Okay. Evan, go ahead.
I got to agree with most of what Jimmy said. You know, the Big Ten, there's not an easy win in the conference this year, and you can lose to anyone on any given night. I mean, we've seen that, you know, Northwestern upsetting Michigan State, Penn State beating Illinois. I mean, it's just every game's going to be tough, and you can't guarantee a win on your schedule. I have to agree. Ohio State, I think, is the favorite. You know, their two losses were to good teams, and I definitely don't see them losing too many more games in the conference. And, I don't think you can pick against them as being a conference favorite right now.
Well, real quickly, let's look ahead and then what we're going to do after the break. We're going to really kind of break down the Big Ten and where it's at now. And as Evan and I talked about last week, the buy, sell, trade rumors. And when I say trade rumors, I don't really mean trading players. I just mean buy, sell, trade in the context of stock. Jimmy, just so you know, I understand that you can't trade college players. Okay, but
would be good though. I would get behind that. Yeah. You know, I'd try to see what I could get for Rydell Jones.
Oh, my goodness. That would be great. Well, you're listening to The Balance on the Balance Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio across the United States. So glad that you could join us on a cold Saturday morning. No better place to be than right here on Blog Talk Radio. Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions, work with them today.
Watching the game, smoking some bud.
Are you all alone?
What's up?
What's up? Who's that?
Yo, pick up the phone. What's up?
What's up?
Yo, Duke, pick up the
What's up? Welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquez, El Presidente. I want to thank our new sponsor of The Balance, Indy's Pet Care Service, Terry's Indy Pet Care Service. I tell you what, they do everything. Doggy daycare, yes, you can have doggy daycare and kitty daycare. They do house calls, sleepovers. They will even take your dog, cat, or other animal to the vet. They take care of everything from dogs, cats, birds, snakes, mice, lizards, chameleons, goldfish, you name it, they take care of it for you. They do grooming, they do poo duty, they give baths, ear cleaning, nail cut. I tell you what, they do it all. Indy's Pet Care, Terry's Indy's Pet Care Service. Here in Indianapolis, 317-410-3377, 317-410-3377, Terry's Indy Pet Service. If you tell them you heard them on The Balance, they're going to give you a special discount. And I tell you what, guys, it's worth it just to have somebody come out and clean up your poo. I don't know. I've got a German Shepherd in my backyard, it's a minefield. So, hey, Terry's Indy Pet Service, 317-410-3377. All right, we're talking Big Ten hoops with two of my college friends and experts, Mr. Jimmy the Intern, Jimmy Kavanaugh, and Evan Williams of Bleeding Gold. Is it Black and Gold, Evan, or Gold and Black?
Gold and Black.
Okay, and I want to make sure that we give you your props and your shout-out for an awesome blog that you have there. Tell us a little bit about what you're writing about right now.
Well, Tom, my most recent article was about the Purdue win over Iowa, and in the next couple of days I'm working on putting together a little profile for the Purdue's 2012 football recruiting class. And also just kind of go over what's going on with, you know, Purdue basketball recruiting, the football team recruiting there, and just everything surrounded by those two right now.
Well, I could tell you one thing. Who would have ever thought that we would have saw the – and, Jimmy, I'll let you take the lead on this. LSU, Notre Dame, IU, I think you know where I'm going with this. And we'll take about 5 seconds to what? WTF? Whiskey, Tango, whatever. What in the world happened? What's going on? Well, could the boy not decide what school he wanted to go to?
I guess not. I mean, apparently his mom played a pretty important role in it too. She didn't want him to go to LSU, so he went to Notre Dame. I really haven't paid very close attention to it since he decommitted from IU, but I was aware that he switched his commitment to LSU. That seemed like where he was going to go up until classes started or the orientation started, and he wasn't there. And then some RA on a Notre Dame dorm floor noticed that Gunnar Keel was on his floor. So that's how the story broke there. But, yeah, I won't hold it against him. I mean, I wouldn't have stayed committed to IU either, probably. If I saw Trey Roberson, Ed Wright Baker, and his brother getting beat up every week by Big Ten schools, I would have feared for my life and changed schools. But then, you know, sometimes mom has to know what's best. And you know, I guess this kid's kind of a mama's boy. Nothing wrong with that, especially living in Columbus, Indiana. I will say nothing against Columbus, by the way. I will say I think Bloomington's closer to Columbus, so if that was really a big reason, I wish you would have beaten them up a little harder about going to IU. But I guess it is what it is, and I'm sure Gunnar will do fine at Notre Dame, better than Tommy Rees, hopefully.
I hear he's going to Purdue next. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we can get into that. We got plenty of time to get into that. I had to bring that up since I had you on the air here. All right, guys, let's talk a little bit about Big Ten and Big Ten's the Big Ten stock and powerhouses and what's going on with the Big Ten, and we'll just kind of do a roundtable discussion. My goodness, Michigan State, what a game, guys. And I really think, in my opinion, this really improved the stock value of Michigan State. So we'll start with you, Evan. Thoughts on Michigan State winning the Big Ten? The Spartans have certainly looked impressive in their four conference wins, including at Wisconsin at home and against Indiana. Their upset to Northwest on Sunday has kept them standing alone on top of the conference standings. Thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely think that Michigan State's going to be in a top three position in the Big Ten. The way they've been playing this season has just been outstanding. They're a really talented team. Draymond Green this year has really taken over, you know, with the loss of Delvon Roe to injuries and the graduations that they had. He's really taken over, and he's one of the best players in the Big Ten. He leads them in pretty much every statistical category this season. And I mean, with Tom Izzo at the helm, I don't think you can ever count Michigan State out for being a contender for the Big Ten title.
Okay, Mr. Jimmy, Michigan State, where do you put them toward the top of the list or the top of the list when it comes to the Big Ten?
I put them right near that top of the list. And speaking as an IU fan, somebody who used to be able to say with ex-coach at the helm, it really improves chances. I'm neutral on Tom Crean. We'll get to that later. But Tom Izzo is one of those guys who you can say is worth, you know, X number of wins in a given season. I don't think this is the most talented team in the Big Ten, but he's managed to get a whole lot out of it with Draymond Green as his best player, Keith Applin wadding time at point guard and shooting guard, whatever suits him best. And then the size they have in the interior – with Derek Nix and some other guys, Adrian Payne being one of them, holding it down in there. They're the epitome of what a Big Ten team should be: balanced, tough, defensive mentality, just all around. This is a Michigan State team I like. They have coaching, they have great home court advantage, and you know, I'm buying them, if we're using stock still, I am buying them as one of the top three teams in the Big Ten, definitely. And the only real threat that I see to overtake Ohio State and win that Big Ten title.
And certainly, welcome to the balance to all of our listeners across the United States. And we see you logging in, and I know I usually make recognition, but we do. We see you guys all over the United States, all the way from California to Maine, and thanks so much for listening to us. And obviously, our listeners up in Detroit, WROM, the thousands of listeners that listen to us on Sunday night. So obviously, you guys aren't listening to us live. And I know you guys are big Michigan and Michigan State fans out there. So glad that you guys could join us and jump in and listen to the conversation. I appreciate all of the tweets and comments that you guys post on our website and Facebook page, which, by the way, Twitter, T-Balance, Facebook, the balance. So, so glad that you guys can join us across the United States. So I know that you're there, and I see that you're there, and there's just too many states and too many places to show where you've logged in. But we do appreciate you listening to us, and we are talking to Evan Williams, Purdue University, and Jimmy Kavanaugh of IU University. We're talking Big Ten hoops. We're talking stocks, buy, sell, trade, power rankings, what have you. So next in my list, and you know, this has kind of been, if you will, a season of whack-a-mole in the Big Ten. I mean, really, it's been kind of muddy. It's been kind of murky. You know, as soon as a team seems to rise to the top there and their stock value seems to go up, I mean, they suffer a really odd loss that brings them back to earth, much like that Minnesota beating Indiana. Who saw that one coming? So there's just some crazy upsets that are happening. So that being said, my list is subject to change, and we just talked about Michigan State. But next in the list, I would put in the number two as far as power rankings go, is Ohio State. Ohio State, really after what they did to Indiana, I guess that's where it moved up in the list above Indiana. You know, and as we talked about last week, Evan and I kind of put Indiana above Ohio State. But the way that I saw Ohio State and then Michigan State play, I've got Ohio State as second in the power rankings here. And they've hit a couple of speed bumps. Of course, they're down there at Assembly Hall and at Illinois. Their four conference wins have been blowouts. So wouldn't be surprised, I would not be surprised anyway, Evan, to see the Buckeyes really climb to the top of the Big Ten very, very soon. Evan?
Yeah, Tom, I definitely think Ohio State is going to be up there with Michigan State, too. They're just very tough at home, and it's even rare when they lose on the road. You know, I know they lost to IU earlier this year, but they're the talent level on that team is just unbelievable, and how Fad Mata brings in this talent year after year just amazes me. And, yeah, I mean, anytime you're playing Ohio State, you're going to have to play one of your best games of the year just because of how good they are and how well they play together. So I'm definitely going to buy the fact that they could be the number one team, and not only in the Big Ten, but they could get back up in the rankings and, you know, finish with a number one seed for the NCAA tournament.
Now, Jimmy, you were at that Ohio State game. You saw Ohio State play firsthand twice this year. What are your thoughts on Ohio State being number two in my power rankings?
Well, I think that's totally fair. I think they're more talented even than Michigan State is with their main rotation players. If anything's going to hurt them this year, though, it's the fact that I don't think they have the capability of going as deep as they were in years past. Normally, Fad Mata doesn't go deep. But when this year when he runs into foul trouble and you have to sit William Buford and Deshaun Thomas and Jared Sullinger, which happened against IU, the alternatives are not as good as they have been in years past. Sam Thompson, a freshman, is still getting his feet wet. Amir Williams, same with him. They don't have a whole lot of experience past the guys in their front seven rotation. And really, when looking at this team, the other big weakness they have is the ability to shoot three or lack thereof. Wenzel Smith is a very effective three-point shooter. Deshaun Thomas can hit them. William Buford can hit them as well. But, you know, when looking at this team, if there's one thing that you want to do to make them beat you, and IU tried this, it did not work against Wenzel Smith and company in Columbus. But I think a team that wants to beat them has to do what IU did, which is double Jared Sullinger and let Ohio State shooters try and beat you. If they do, you know, good on them. But I'd say it's just as likely as not they're going to have a cold shooting game, and that's what's going to cause them some trouble, I would think, potentially in the NCAA tournament. A deep team with good post defense that can avoid going out, like going down to double team and leaving open shooters on the arc. And that's their only weakness, really, that they don't have a great cast of perimeter shooters. And outside of their top three scorers, they don't have a guy who can really score the ball consistently.
Well, there you go. I think we're all in agreement with Ohio State. Now, number three in my list here is Indiana. And I had them at number two, I believe, last week. But Indiana, you know, they had a huge win over Kentucky and Ohio State, Evan, and really showed that this team is a lot better than Hoosiers in the past. We just talked about this a while ago, Jimmy, the fact that we can actually start a conversation with IU than we have been able to over the last few years. Obviously, their loss at MSU and OSU are nothing to be ashamed of, but the home loss to Minnesota was definitely a surprise. And then getting just stunned by Nebraska, I think the stock with Indiana, if they don't change things, is starting to fall. Right now I still keep them in my top five, number three in the power rankings, but I don't know how much longer I can hold my grip on the IU and the Big Ten anyway. I'm not saying that the big picture of the tournament is out of the way, but I'm just saying they have got to win inside the Big Ten to really get the power to be noted as a great team in the NCAA. You've got to win inside your conference, and it doesn't get any better or any tougher than the Big Ten. And IU needs to win in the Big Ten. So I got them as number three in my power rankings. Evan, go ahead.
You know, we all know that IU can win at home. I mean, of course, they had the loss to Minnesota at home, which was not helping them at all. But, you know, I think what IU has to do to be successful is they have to win on the road. You know, Tom Crean, throughout his career at IU, has struggled to win on the road, frankly, any game on the road. They've won very few in the Big Ten. So I think that's what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to, you know, when they go to Wisconsin, they're going to have to win, you know, when they go to Michigan and Purdue and, you know, they have Iowa in a couple weeks, you know, they have to win those games. They can't afford to lose as many games as they do on the road. So I think that's going to be a big thing for IU is just being able to win on the road, be successful on the road in the Big Ten. And another thing is I think they just need to play like they did against, you know, Kentucky and against Ohio State when they won. You know, I watched some of the Nebraska game, and they didn't look like the same team at all. They didn't look like they wanted it as bad, and they didn't look like they, you know, had the ability to beat Nebraska by 20 like they should. So I think they just need to change. They need to, you know, remember how they were playing against, you know, Kentucky, Ohio State, when they beat Michigan. They need to play like that and not play like how they did against, you know, Minnesota and Nebraska. They just have to, I think the two big things are playing with more confidence, you know, getting their confidence back up, and then playing better on the road and being able to win on the road.
Now, Jimmy, this is obviously your territory, so we'll let you spend a couple minutes and help us unpack this with IU. You know, a few weeks ago, I was ranting and raving right along with every other IU fan out there. Doug Gottlieb, how dare you? How dare you get on ESPN and dog out IU for not winning games and not being a good team? Well, now, maybe there was a crystal ball going on there or something, and we hear Evan say the same thing. IU has got to win on the road. So I want you to take a few minutes and just really explain to me about IU, and I've got them number three in my power ranking. Maybe you guys certainly maybe have them lower or higher, and so certainly feel free to disagree with me. But that's why I feel like Indiana has dropped in the power rankings, and they have got to hang on to their position in the Big Ten. So go ahead, Jimmy, take a couple minutes and help us understand this whole IU saga and game of whack-a-mole that they're in.
Well, just to lead off with Doug Gottlieb, I wasn't necessarily jumping on him and you know, killing him for dogging IU because I think there were some I don't think there were indications that something like this was happening, but he was right that the resume was something that lent itself to question. I think the main problem that I had with Gottlieb was that he came off like a dick. And that was the only thing. It was fun getting on him about that. But really, most of the points he put forward were valid and are really becoming more and more apparent. And, you know, you just said it. You still have IU number three in your Big Ten power rankings. I think the resume wins that they have, both in and out of conference, would, you know, win that argument, even with the 3-4 record right now in conference. But I would have to disagree with that positioning, given how they're playing and how they've been playing recently. Evan made a great point when he said that they didn't look the same against Nebraska than they did against Kentucky and Ohio State. And he also said that Tom Crean's teams at IU have struggled to win on the road. To the first point,
definitely. It's a different-looking team, and that's what IU fans are kind of freaking out about. This looks like the team of last year and the year before, where they would lock up and not play the system that they're supposed to play, not play it loosely enough. And it's almost like they're gripping a little bit. There's a whole lot of baggage with this team, you know, with these 6-win seasons, the 10-win and 12-win seasons. They'd won 28 games in 3 years coming into this season, which is hard to overcome mentally for a group like this. I think we're worried. I think there are a lot of people that are worried that we're seeing that again. As far as the wins on the road point, Evan said that they've had trouble winning any games on the road. The record is now 2-29 with Tom Crean as a head coach, both of the road wins coming against Penn State, 2 years apart. So, I mean, that's something that is, you know, honestly, Evan, you made an understatement when you said they've had trouble winning on the road. It would be a shocker historically for them to win at Wisconsin or Michigan or Purdue, because they haven't beaten anybody except the Nittany Lions, which is not good. Not good, by the way. So really just getting to this next point, getting to this next game against Penn State, we're looking at the second half of a fulcrum point. Nebraska was the first one the people were really keeping an eye on, and there were people in the media down here who were looking at that game as kind of an indicator of where IU was. And I don't think it gave us a good answer. If Nebraska could have hit some outside shots, open outside shots, they had opportunities to hit more. They could have won that game by double digits. And, you know, I don't think there are a lot of people happy with that. This Penn State game is the second one before the schedule gets real gritty again. It's on the road at Wisconsin, home against Iowa, then back-to-back road games against Michigan and Purdue. And, you know, really, I think this Penn State game is going to be key in seeing where they can get – seeing where IU is going to be playing. They've got to get their heads back on straight. And personally, I think they have to come out and play the kind of game that they did, if not against a team like Howard or UMBC or Evansville, then against a game against Notre Dame, where they just ground out a big, you know, solid 15-point victory. And I think they have the talent to do that against Penn State. They're a much more talented and experienced team than Penn State is. And this should be a game where the defense reestablishes itself, where the offense hits some open perimeter shots, and where they really blow Penn State out, if not spectacularly, then consistently. This should be something along the lines of a 70-50 or 55 win. I mean, this should be a 15-20 point win. And if it's not, you know, that's something where IU fans really need to hit the panic button even more than they are. Because I'll tell you what, Tom, if this game is a 5-10 point win, where IU really struggles, there's really no way they should lose to Penn State. If they lose to Penn State, we're having another conversation entirely. But if they don't look impressive against Penn State, I think it's entirely possible that they lose at Wisconsin, home against Iowa, and their next two road games, and really head into a spiral downward in Big Ten play.
And I couldn't agree with you more. That's why I said they've got to hang on to win here in the Big Ten. I want to move through these power rankings that I have made here, and then I want to move over to a couple of players. I want to get those in because I think we've had some stock options change in our players as well. And number four I've got is Illinois. Illinois just looked terrible in their loss to Purdue. And, Evan, you can certainly comment on these rankings. I'm just going to kind of go through here and let you guys kind of talk about it real quickly because I do want to get to the players. But, you know, Illinois just looked terrible against their loss to Purdue. And I guess they did bounce back with a close win in Northwestern. And then going into talk about the players a little bit, Brandon Paul, 43-point outburst against Ohio State. Illinois number four, Michigan number five, Wisconsin number six. I try to get you down to where your topic is, Evan. I put Iowa and Purdue kind of at a tie. I mean, to say the Boilermakers have been inconsistent this year is to state the obvious. It'd be kind of redundant, and we've already talked about that, Evan. Their wins at Iowa and Minnesota are looking more impressive now, and is that they certainly destroyed Illinois, like I just said, in the second half of that game. A 20-point loss to Penn State remains the team's only conference win, and they look bad in their home loss to Wisconsin. And then, again, I tie it up with Iowa because, you know, the Hawkeyes, you know, suffered some embarrassing non-conference losses, but they seem to be putting it together at the right time. Iowa's already has wins at Minnesota and Wisconsin, and their win against Michigan was impressive. A 500 record is a good start, especially with the schedule they have played. So I put Purdue and Iowa together, and then Northwestern at 9, and then 11, Penn State, and just Nebraska. I think they're just down there. That's why I was so stunned by the back-to-back Minnesota and Nebraska losses to IU, because those are two teams that IU should have beat. So go ahead, Evan, give us your thoughts on that, and go ahead, Jimmy, you can give your thoughts on the rest of the power rankings, because I certainly want to get over to the players while we still got a few minutes. So go ahead, Evan.
Well, I definitely think Purdue is above Iowa. They beat them twice this year. So I think Purdue is definitely above Iowa. But with Purdue's positioning, I think I have to agree at this point. You know, in 2 weeks, come back and talk to me, and then I'll decide on where they should be, because they've got a tough stretch. They play at Michigan State today. Then next week they've got Michigan at home. They're away at Northwestern. Then the big game on the 4th against IU. Then we're traveling to Ohio State. So after that stretch is going to really be when I think we'll get a better look at where Purdue is, because like I said, you know, in that win against Illinois, they looked like they were a top conference team. You know, they beat them by 15 points, and Illinois really never stood a chance in that game. But then turn around the very next game, they get blown out by a horrible, not good at all Penn State team, who as of recent has kind of shown that they can, you know, make a little noise and pull an upset. But, I mean, I think it with Purdue, it depends on how they play, you know. Are they going to play like how they did against Illinois and really show that they have the talent to be a successful team in the Big Ten? Or are they going to play like they did against Penn State and look like they don't even belong in the conference? Or like the Wisconsin loss, that just – I was at the game, and it was a horrible, horrible game. The first half was pathetic. At one point, we were down 22-4. And, I mean, that should never happen at home for Purdue. And, I mean, they got it that close at times. It, you know, get it down to 2 or 3, but then we'd commit a stupid foul, or Wisconsin hit a 3 and go up. You know, the game ended up being 67-62, so they did get it very close after being down as big as 22-4 early on. But I think this next stretch of games is going to be where we'll be able to really decide where Purdue belongs, you know, if they're at the top or the bottom half of the conference.
Okay, Jimmy, real quickly.
The only thing that I would say, it would probably be flip-flopping the positioning of Michigan and Illinois. Maybe that's a little biased against Illinois, but I don't think they're a great team. I think they got fortunate against Ohio State. I think they've taken care of business the way they needed to. But I don't see Illinois being able to stay at the top of those rankings in their current positioning for very much longer. I think Michigan overtakes them. And I think Wisconsin could overtake them. And then getting down to even the bottom of the Big Ten, Nebraska and Penn State are the only teams that I would say are different, in a different class than everyone else. I think everybody else has at least a puncher's chance of getting to the tournament. Even Minnesota, after what I saw there, they're a good rebounding team. They have players. And Iowa's actually a decent team. I mean, I wasn't expecting that with their bad non-conference losses. But I think Iowa can come out and beat just about anybody on a given night, and I think we've seen that so far this year. So, I mean, but other than that, yeah, I'd say those rankings are pretty solid and just shows that the Big Ten is pretty balanced, pretty tough this year.
And that it is. And, you know, and you were talking about Illinois, and the two things that I really – why I put Illinois kind of where they're at, there's two players, Joseph Bernard and Brandon Paul. Both of those guys, you know, really, I don't think really any of us knew much about Joseph Bernard before Christmas. And then he just came out with just an explosion. And I guess everybody's heard of him now. He's very athletic. He's uncanny. And he has the ability to get to the basket, you know, for just shot after shot. To me, he's just fun to watch. So I like him a lot. And then Brandon Paul, number two in my stock. I think he's come up a lot there in Illinois. You heard me mention him a while ago. And obviously the 43-point game against Aaron Kraft and Ohio State puts him on his list all by itself, guys. So we've got to have a conversation of top stock players with Brandon Paul. And you guys could certainly insert any names here that you want. I'm just going to go through a few, and you can mix or match your stock officer because we're running out of time, so I just want to get through these. Obviously, Roddy Williams over Minnesota, the Big Ten's most athletic player, I think. You know, Williams has taken his game to a completely new level. I think he's doing great. And obviously, I understand that he's getting a little bit more playing time because of Trevor McAbee down with a knee injury. But I guess he's finally playing. And I know, Evan, you do a lot. You follow a lot of recruits, and I don't know if you had your radar on him earlier on. But I think he's certainly developing into that player that everybody thought that he could be. Keith Appleton over there at Michigan State, I think he's one of the biggest reasons that Michigan State is doing what they're doing, 4-1 starting the Big Ten play, and has been a big improvement. I think you got to give credit to Keith Appleton on that. And then my last guy who I think is in the top of stock exchange to if you were to buy per se is Tony McCray of Nebraska. Again, Nebraska to me is a team that's at the bottom of the list. Indiana should have beaten them. I don't know why that didn't happen. But with the Huskers, both Brian Diaz and Talley to open up the conference slate, McCray has accepted a larger role and helped make up for the duo scoring and rebounding production. So, Evan, go ahead and agree, disagree, add whoever you want. And, you know, obviously, I'm sure you're going to want to talk a little bit about Lewis Jackson. I think his stock is falling. But to his credit, Jackson hasn't been healthy this season either. So go ahead, Evan.
I definitely like the point with Keith Appling. You know, Michigan State lost Kalen Lucas, one of the top point guards for the past couple seasons in the Big Ten. And, you know, Appling had more of a reserve role last year, but now he's really coming into his own, and he's going to be great for the Spartans for these upcoming years. I think there's a lot of talent there, and that was a great pickup by Tom Izzo right there. And then with Lewis Jackson, his health has been the major concern this year. He's really been beat up. You know, he's a small guy. He's 5'9 on a good day, 165 pounds. You know, when he's driving in on these big guys, he's going to get beat up. So his health has been a big concern lately. You know, he had a pretty good stretch where he wasn't a factor at all, which really hurt Purdue. But then, you know, he came out against Minnesota and he put on a 23-point performance and really led the team to victory. The other night against Iowa, he had a nice, you know, 14-point performance. And, you know, it just depends on his health, you know, how he's feeling. I know Coach Painter's been resting him a little bit more. He's been subbing in and out a lot more these past couple of games, which I think is good right now. You know, if Purdue wants to make a run, you know, in the Big Ten tournament, and hopefully if they make the NCAA tournament, it's going to be key that Lewis Jackson is healthy.
All right, go ahead, Jimmy, and certainly add whoever you want. Obviously, as to Evans, Lewis Jackson, we got Cody Zeller to talk about. I don't think he's quite doing what he has potential to do. I think his stock has fallen somewhat as well. And again, a lot of that could just be adjustments, you know, to getting started and playing in the Big Ten and playing some big competitive teams. I'm not sure, but go ahead, Jimmy.
Actually, Tom, I'm going to have to disagree with you there because what I've seen from Cody Zeller so far in Big Ten play, and I'll preface this by saying I agree with your other stock picks. I think Keith Appling, again, I'll jump in on him. I really like Appling. And, you know, Lewis Jackson has been a little disappointing. I mean, you know, all the other guys you talked about, I have no issue at all with there. Cody Zeller, though, in Big Ten play has been a lot more impressive than I thought he would be. Which is why I'd say maybe my personal stock for him has risen a little bit. He put up 23 points and 8 rebounds against Minnesota, 16-6 against Ohio State, another good game against Nebraska. I believe he scored 18 points there. So, and he's been not only the Hoosiers' most impressive scorer, he's been their most consistent player in Big Ten play, which is a problem. I mean, no one else in this team has been able to step up and do what they need to do. Except for Cody Zeller. So it's in that I'll say that I'm actually totally fine with his stock. And if anything, I think it's rising. Not being able to get enough touches in the post is one thing, not having the guys who can feed him. But when he's gotten the ball, he's done really good things with it. Another guy with rising stock that I'd like to hit on Trey Burke from Michigan. I'll go with another freshman. And while people have known about him, I don't think people have really been able to appreciate what he's brought to this Michigan team. I think he's better than Darius Morris was last year for these guys.
Jimmy, I hate to do this. I really do, and we'll have to continue this next week. But we've ran out of time, guys, and I appreciate everything that you guys have contributed, and we love talking some hoop basketball with you. Hopefully we can do this every week and really catch up on our stocks. So real quickly, Evan, where can people find your work? And then, Jimmy, where can people find yours?
You can find my blog at bleedinggoldenblack.blogspot.com, where I post about Purdue football and basketball. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Evan_Williams25, which also I'm very active on, tweeting about Purdue basketball, football, and everything that goes on in my fun life as a Purdue student.
Okay, Jimmy, go ahead real quickly.
All right, follow me on Twitter at JPCIV, just the letters JPCIV, and you can check out my written work at iusportcom.com.
All right, guys, that's going to do it. Thanks for joining us here on The Ballots on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you next Saturday, 9 a.m. Be careful out there, guys. Super Bowl's getting closer. We'll know next week.
Well, when I say when you got to go, you got to go.
You have made me very angry. Very angry indeed.
Oh, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was going to say son of a bitch, didn't you?
That's all, folks.
Boo!
Boo!
That was the worst thing I ever heard.
It was terrible.
Horrendous.
Well, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, yeah?
Well, there were parts of it I liked.
Yeah, I liked a lot of it.
Yeah, it was good.
It was great.
It's wonderful.
Oh, bravo.
More!
More!